from KMXT and Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the chum bycatch in the pollock bee season is so far even higher than all of last year. What's it like fishing from a 100-year-old boat? And can the tiny fishing community of Pelican return to its former glory days? All that, and where to put the Fisherman's Memorial in Juneau? Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
There's been another tragedy in Alaska commercial fisheries this week. 37-year-old Gilbert Kilbuck of Platinum is missing and presumed lost after he fell overboard from his fishing vessel in Good News Bay on Monday morning. Alaska State Troopers say Kilbuck was thrown from his 24-foot skiff Monday morning when the boat was hit by a wave in the bay on the Bering Sea coast between Dillingham and Bethel. He was not wearing a life jacket. The Coast Guard launched a search on Monday morning. Area residents continued the search from the water after the Coast Guard suspended its search Monday evening. Trooper spokeswoman Beth Ibsen says the accident occurred after Kilbuck and his brother headed from the south spit of the bay to fish for salmon. The Board of Directors for the Alaska Commercial Fishermen's Memorial in Juneau has come out in favor of leaving the monument where it is and against building a cruise ship dock in front of it. Last year, the City and Borough of Juneau Assembly approved a plan to construct two new floating berths on Gastineau Channel, one of which would sit in front of the memorial. For now, $2 million has been included in the dock expansion budget for the purpose of moving the memorial if necessary. Chum salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea pollock fishery this bee season is outpacing recent years. According to the National Marine Fisheries Service, more than 37,000 non-Chinook salmon were taken as bycatch during the first 2 weeks of the bee season. By comparison, just over 13,000 chum salmon were taken in all of 2010. Still, bycatch isn't near the levels of 2004 and 2005, where approximately 500,000 chum salmon were taken in the bee season.
Chum bycatch is a bit higher than normal this year. However, not alarmingly so.
That's Josh Keaton, an in-season manager with the National Marine Fisheries Service. Because of the increase in bycatch, rolling hotspot closures were put into effect on June 23rd. The rolling hotspot closure program has existed for about a decade now and utilizes the fleet's data to determine where chum bycatch is up. High bycatch rates can then trigger a closure of 4 to 7 days for a cooperative in a given area. He adds that just a week after the rolling hotspot program was put into place, only 2,000 chum were taken as bycatch. Approximately 107,000 metric tons of pollock were harvested in June. The allocation for the bee season is set at 740,000 metric tons.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by
the Pebble Partnership, pursuing jobs and opportunities for Southwest Alaska. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
Reporter Ed Ronco of KCAW Radio in Sitka has produced a 3-part series on the small fishing community of Pelican on Chichagof Island, which aired this week. In the first 2 parts, he reported on the city's economic troubles, which center around the closure of its massive cold storage plant, and on how residents feel about some of the community's struggles. In this 3rd report, Ed reports on the future of the city and those who see hope and promise in Lisianski Inlet.
Ice. Pelican was always known for having clean, quality ice, the kind fishermen need to keep their catch in good condition until the boat can get back to shore. But when the cold storage here closed, that went away. It could come back soon. The city received an $800,000 federal grant to buy 2 new ice machines. Whether those ice machines get installed depends on the success of negotiations to buy the cold storage property from its owners. Mayor Clint Bean says if that happens, he hopes the ice machines, at least, will be the start of some new industry in Pelican.
With the ice factor, we will have a bigger draw to the fishermen, and with more fishermen coming in, then we'll have more use of all the local facilities, businesses, restaurants, etc. And that'll create more economy for Pelican itself.
And he says there are other things to help that happen. The city's broken water flume is under repair, which means jobs here for those repairing it. And once it's up and running, Pelican will return to hydropower. For going on 2 years, the city has generated electricity from diesel, which has pushed rates up to more than 50 cents per kilowatt hour. That's hardly a record among small Alaska communities, but it's steep compared to Sitka's 9 cents or Juneau's 12.
I won't give you a number, but it's safe to say that the hydro will lower the rates.
In addition to the cold storage purchase, the city also wants to buy the fuel dock. Both of them are owned by Cake Tribal Corporation. Some $300,000 for the fuel dock purchase was included in this year's capital budget. Those things, says Mayor Clint Bean, could help attract more people to this city. But he's also hoping to retain the ones who are here, especially young residents. That includes his son. Christopher Bean just completed his junior year of high school. He's sitting at a table inside the Lisiansky Inlet Cafe, waiting for a mushroom cheeseburger. He moved up here 2 years ago from Metro Seattle and says after he graduates from high school, he wants to go to college someplace warm.
This year is the first year that I took a college course and got dual enrollment credits, so...
He wants to be mayor.
Yeah, I guess, sure.
You don't sound convinced.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Okay, so he doesn't want to be mayor, but he says he does want to come back here, at least in the summertime.
What would it take to get somebody your age to stay in a place like Pelican for a long time?
Oh, wow. More kids, for sure. More families. I guess we'd just have to expand a bit, because I've heard a lot of stories about the old days and, you know, how there used to be a bunch of people here, but... And the cold storage was going and everything was working out, and now everything sort of hit bottom.
The old days, like, how long ago were the old days?
Oh, man. Like, 90s, probably? I don't know.
In 1990, Pelican's official population was 222. In the 2010 census, it was 88. While the future of Pelican rests, in part, on people like him, it also depends on new people coming in. People like Mike Chapman.
I had a construction company down south and just wanted to do something different. Had been here a few times visiting and decided, you know, couldn't think of a better place to live.
He calls himself semi-retired, came up here to do some commercial fishing, hand trolling, and now power trolling. And he's also on the city council.
It's a great community to live in. It's, you know, people here all care a lot about each other, and it's obvious with all the problems we've had the last... however you want to say, maybe even 10 years with the opening and closing of the cold storage, it, the community has survived and keeps moving along.
Reporting from Pelican, I'm Ed Ronco.
You can hear the whole three-part series at kcaw.org. A small fleet of Seattle-based wooden halibut schooners still ply the waters of Alaska, though they're nearly a century old. The Tordenskjold is 100 years old this year, and she's expected to work well into her second century. The Tordenskjold and other working ships in the fleet are the subject of a television documentary which premiered Wednesday on the Alaska Channel 360 North. K2OO's Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau and KBBI's Marsha Lynn in Homer teamed up to bring us this story on the old fishing vessels.
Seattle-area filmmaker John Sabella has produced about 20 documentaries over the years, many of them on the fishing industry. He's fascinated by the old schooners.
I can't imagine how many industrial assets that are 100 years old are still making a living, making a profit, supporting family wage jobs, doing almost exactly what they did at the turn of the 20th century or just shortly after that.
The Tordenskjold is the oldest ship in the working fleet, hence the name of Sabella's documentary.
She's not a museum piece or any kind of a hobby enterprise. She's a vessel that competes every day against modern boats. It's quite a remarkable story.
Last board!
A sister ship, the Polaris, is a mere 98 years old. She pulled into Homer last week to offload about 50,000 pounds of fresh halibut. Skipper Wade Bassey is a third-generation halibut fisherman. He's been on the Polaris for 34 years, the skipper for 25, and an owner for 20. His grandfather built the schooner Alton in 1912, when these vessels operated under sail.
He spent $15,000 to build that boat. And to replace this boat, you couldn't do it.
The 87-foot Polaris has been repowered a couple of times. When Bassey had to replace fuel tanks last year, it forced other changes.
We put new tanks in, we put new engine in, we built a new pilot house on it, so, you know, it should be good for another 30, 35 years.
These things owe their longevity to generations of Norwegian nautical tradition. They owe themselves to some remarkable craftsmen who were building boats at the turn of the century. But most of all, they owe their longevity to the remarkable resource that was available in those years, and that was the old-growth fir that grew on the Puget Sound.
Most of the stuff on the boat is original. I mean, below waterline, the keel, most of the planks, some of the planks on here are over 40 feet long.
And Bassey says the Polaris double-sawn 8x8 frame, all vertical grain old-growth fir, is in great shape.
Because once a wood boat is in the salt water, the salt actually pickles the wood, and so it lasts longer. The only problem you have in salt water is that you can get churritos or bugs, and they'll decay and eat the wood. Well, the good thing about most of our schooners is that we're berthed in Seattle in the lake, so we get in fresh water every year. So when you get in fresh water kills all these bugs, so we don't have as much a problem with that.
When the Norwegian halibut schooners are not fishing, the boats are in Lake Union. Bassey has seen the historical pictures of lumberyards stretching from Lake Union to Puget Sound.
I think it was 2 or 3 mills there. And, you know, when they wanted a plank for the boat, they'd go out to the yard and they'd look at it. Oh, this looks good. Not a knot in it. You know, 40 feet long, straight grain, you know, perfect fir. And they'd grab it and take it over and use it.
But nowadays, it's difficult to find the fir and the craftsmen who can work on the old schooners. Bassey says he spends a couple of months each winter on maintenance, and his bill is huge. Dave Seaman is president of the Ketchikan Bay Wooden Boat Society. When the Polaris pulled into Homer last week, it was his first time on one of the century-old schooners. He found it easy to romanticize.
The longevity of these boats, the way they're built, the way they've been fished, the fact that a lot of them stayed in the same families, it's sort of a dynasty thing. If I was a young man again, I'd be looking for a job on one of these. That's all I can tell you.
When you look at this thing, it's, I mean, it's basically a dinosaur, really, to be honest with you.
The FV Polaris and her sister schooners sport all the GPS and other high-tech instruments, but aren't as versatile on the fishing grounds as modern vessels. If it weren't for the lucrative halibut individual fishing quotas implemented in 1995 and eliminating the race for fish, Bassey says most of the old fleet probably wouldn't be fishing right now.
But as far as a platform for long lining, it's ideal. You know, we're economical. We burn probably, you know, a third or a quarter of the fuel that some of those big boats do. And, you know, she's a real good sea boat. She rolls a lot, but she's always going to come back.
Bassey remembers the names of sister ships that aren't around anymore, but he expects his nephew will take over the Polaris when he retires.
And I know that the ones in the Seattle fleet, they're well taken care of. I mean, they'll be around for a while. They aren't going to go anywhere.
Beginning with black cod in the spring through halibut in the fall, the century-old schooners fish in the Gulf of Alaska, Bering Sea, and Aleutian Chain. With help from Marshall Lynn and Homer, I'm Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau.
Tordenskjold, the boat of the century, will repeat on 360 North this Sunday.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, KTOO's Casey Kelly and Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau, KBBI's Marsha Lynn in Homer, and KCAW's Ed Ronco in Sitka. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.